Here we will explore the true facts about Gene Hensler, Ph.D. Being a college student of the 60s, Gene Hensler decided to pursue a Ph.D. because he thought it meant pretty hip dude, whereas it took the average college student at that time 4 years to get their degree. It took Gene Hensler 13 years to obtain his advanced degree. So imagine the 4 years you spent partying, studying in college, and triple it. A pretty hip dude indeed.
That's what that stands for. I always wondered.
You wondered. Piled hip deep is another meaning for it, too.
There you go. Before we get back into that, let's let them know how they can contact us. If you have questions, anything about the stock market, obviously we're talking a little about business valuations today. Economy, taxes, we can try to answer just about any of your questions. Gene is a doctor, and he often tells people.
I'm an expert in everything.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Why not? So give us a call, 770-429-9166.
Or email us at drgene@hensler.com.
There you go.
Or tweet us or do whatever, and we'll be happy.
Facebook.
We taped this on Thursday, so you need to get it in by Wednesday.
Yeah, okay. So we can get your questions answered.
Troy's going to add a lot of light on this with his new designation.
There we go.
We're talking about the need for a business valuation. So. Right. So we have a scenario here where we've got two partners, and one, there's a guy and a lady, and he's a little bit older. He's looking to get out of the business, and this is a small grocery store, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yep.
And it was purchased by Allen back in 85, and then Ellen came into the picture in 07, and there's been a lot of growth. And so now I think we're sitting at with a business about $1.2 million in sales, $60,000 in profit. And the issue comes up, we've got a transition going on, right, Troy?
Right, yeah, absolutely. So what they're looking at is, like you said, Ellen's going to take over the store. She's also got another potential partner that's going to be coming in, and she doesn't really know what the store's, what the business is worth. One of the things that is mentioned in here is, back when Ellen came on as a partner in 07, the business was... had revenues of $500,000, earnings of about $15,000.
She has shared in a proportional amount of those profits.
Right, yeah, would expect
so. She has not been short-shifted here by the fellow who owns 60%.
No, none whatsoever. In fact, if you one of the other details of the story is when she bought in, they just used the... asset-based valuation, which basically you take all of the assets of the business and then you subtract all the liabilities and you come up with a number, and that's how she purchased her shares in the business. Well, that's
why
probably
does that not
good,
always work?
Well, that might have been fair at that time.
Right.
Right.
But the problem is, I always say I only want to own 1% of the business.
The one that's controlling. Right?
The 51st percent.
Right, absolutely.
Because that share is worth more.
Yeah.
Just that one share is worth tons more than all the other shares.
And that's why you have minority discounts in business valuation, right, Troy?
Absolutely. And one of the other things you have to consider is that would have been a reasonable way to value the business if you didn't expect the growth that they actually had.
Yep.
If you do the math, the growth that they've experienced over the last 7 years is about 13% annually,
that's
really attractive.
Do we know who accounted for that, or they just – Both were hardworking and thoughtful.
Part of it is the neighborhood began to flourish again. It was a blighted neighborhood when Ellen took in the partnership, and it has actually the neighborhood's turning. They have an organic grocery store,
which is sort of rare. 7 years ago in the neighborhood
it would have been, and now we're talking just about the Whole Foods earnings, how that's becoming a little more popular these days. This would be another one of those scenarios. So basically you're down to the question as to how in the world do you come up with a value for this business. Obviously, if it's been growing at 13%, you wouldn't expect that just to fall back to a to a growth rate that would match inflation, which is, you know, what you do normally if you
Troy, how much how much did she pay for her 40%? Do you have that number?
Don't see it in this detail. Yeah, we don't have a
We do know they use the asset-based approach, you know, well, originally, but there's there's three different approaches we can look at.
But now let's think about this. If you got sales of a 1.2 million,
right?
If it sold at 1x earnings,
yep.
In theory, then he should get $700,000.
Sure, yeah, 60% of 1.2.
Yeah, and that would be understating what he should get because that gives control.
It absolutely does. Well, and she's buying, actually.
But it's not a highly profitable business, so I'm not sure. I mean, we're talking about a company that generated, what, $60,000 in net profit? Yep. I mean, there's a lot of cost of goods sold that go into these sales, right?
Absolutely.
So now we're talking about business valuation, and it's an abstract kind of thing. In fact, you can actually study and get a certification in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Charlie got one on divorce.
Right. Yeah. He can he can get you divorced, and I can help you figure out who owns what and how much it's worth.
There you go.
how much the little lady is going to get.
That's right.
But anyhow, what are the valuations?
All right. So there are three different types of business valuations. Three major methods. Ben, as you mentioned, you know, this was an asset-based valuation. You can also do an income-based valuation,
right,
or a market-based valuation. The one that generally comes up with the biggest number is your income-based, and you would want to do that if you had a business that was growing revenues and earnings.
Because at the end of the day, what is somebody that, if they're buying a business, they're buying a stream of money, right?
Absolutely.
That's correct.
Going into the future.
Cash flows.
It's just like buying stock.
Yep.
Right.
And so, you know, you look, the income base is going to be focused on, well, what is that net cash flow to the owner each year?
Yep.
And what is that worth? And that's just a discounting methodology.
Absolutely.
And they say 60 grand, all right? If we took that it's 60% of sales, that's 720,000.
Right.
Right? I don't know.
It's probably going to be like a PE if you're looking at income.
If you're looking at a PE of 10, which would be a lot for a small business, that's 600,000, and then 60% of that would be 360,000.
Right.
So I've just created a valuation differential.
Oh, it'd be huge.
A 50% differential.
Absolutely. Yep. And here's the thing.
She's going to want to buy it on earnings. Right. He's going to want to sell it on
revenue.
On revenue.
Right. That can be the case. And the things that you have to – I mean, there's a million things that go into this.
Yes.
And like you said, even when you look at an asset-based valuation, you can consider that maybe the owner that's retiring was the driving force behind the growth that they've had. That would be something that's intangible. It's difficult to value something that you can't really – kick. I mean,
and that's, you know, that's, you know, lots of businesses sell for more than the value of the assets.
I mean,
and one of those big ones.
Maybe Alan's the guy who's up front shaking everybody's hand.
Yeah.
Yep.
Putting the hamburger together, showing that. And Alan is running the business.
Yeah, right. The operations.
The operations of the thing. Both equally important, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without one, business.
When Alan goes, he'll come in, where's Alan?
No. Exactly. And the next thing you know, sales start to trail off. It's really hard.
It's possible.
It is possible.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not an absolute.
What you're talking about is goodwill. And, I mean, that's a component to many businesses, is the owner's goodwill.
That is an immeasurable, actually.
Well, about the only way you could measure it. With a small, closely held business, you could say it's almost immeasurable because what you'd have to do is determine this business relative to one that didn't have that component and see what the differential is and the premium that this business might draw if it had that intangible asset is basically the heart of the value of that intangible asset. But it's hard to get comparables when you're dealing with a small business.
And how it works, you know, from a tax standpoint, because all these things have to be reported on the buyer and the seller, right?
Right. Right.
And so you normally do this, you know, an asset purchase agreement whenever you have a business sale, and how you come up with the value of goodwill. Is this the leftover?
Yes, absolutely.
I paid $10,000 for furniture and, you know, fixtures, but I paid a total purchase price of $100,000.
Right.
You bought $90,000 of goodwill.
Absolutely.
And so that gets treated differently from tax.
And there's a lot of other things. I'm looking at a few of these things.
Yeah.
They have a business loan for $120,000.
Right.
So that would come off of any.
That's
a percentage of that would come off any price that were to be sold.
Right.
They have non-operating asset in land adjacent to the market where they could expand on.
Yeah. So, but it seems like she doesn't want to expand using that. So if you're going to, you have to consider whether or not that non-operating asset is actually part of the business, or would it go with Alan, who's going to leave the business. Does he keep that asset? So, or at least a percentage
ownership.
Yeah.
Does he walk away with his $80,000 in cash? Does he walk away with $48,000 in cash?
Yeah, well, it would surely be compensated for in the valuation of the business.
And somehow, like that.
Sure. Yeah, he owns 60% of $80,000, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, these are all considerations. And, you know, if you're potentially confused by all of these different factors, if you just look
at the
assets.
That's why you need an expert.
That is true. If you look at the assets, you take the assets minus the liabilities. If you're going to do an income-based, you can do it actually one of two ways. You can either look at the stream of cash flows, as Ben said. So in that respect, it includes the growth factor that would be within the business. And then you run all those cash flows out and you divide them by a number that gets you back to present value.
Well, yeah.
And that number is usually the cost of your capital. So it would be the borrowing and then the cost of equity that's in the business. Cost of equity can be another one of those difficult things to figure out. So in order to have that divisor, you have to get that number as well.
This question comes up not just when somebody's buying somebody out, but somebody dies.
Right.
There's lots
and what's the valuation of that business?
Right.
So because Uncle Sam is going to take a
very
tax on that.
Right.
And your argument you popped up earlier is that a negative, a minority position is worth a whole lot less
absolutely
than a majority. So right. One of the smart things for people who own a business is to have no one have a majority share in the business. You could have a trust. You could have the wife have 40%. He have 40%. So if he dies, it's a minority interest in the business.
And that's
it. Wasn't 80% ownership, husband and wife who got along.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's not.
Yeah, and there's lots of different motivations. When you go to have if you were getting a divorce and you needed to have a business valuation, your motivation
it's
is
worth
to keep
nothing,
it.
Honey.
I know. I mean,
nothing.
So, you know, you're going to sell it, you know, you want a high number. So, I mean, there's a huge range of outcomes on these things. It's just a matter of approaching it from a reasonable basis, you know, that's going to support your position. But there's
absolutely
a number of different ways to do it. You can look at multiples of revenue, you know, income approach, like we talked about. Or the asset approach.
Or the market-based approach, which is, you know, if there's good enough information, you can get out and see what other transactions have occurred in the market.
The problem is, in most of these small businesses, they are unique.
That is true.
True.
Yes,
it's
absolutely.
It's not like I'm going to compare the shares of General Motors versus Ford.
Right.
Right.
I would argue that you're pretty much cheating yourself if you don't go through the process of figuring out what your future cash flows are. It's not going to be a perfect practice, but you can get a whole lot of information by seeing what history has done to the business, how it's grown, or maybe it hasn't grown.
And if you file an estate tax return on the assumption of X, and the IRS says, well, where'd you come up with that valuation?
Yeah, you could wind up in court with these things.
Oh, yeah. Plenty of them get litigated because it's usually a pretty big number.
At least give Troy a call.
Yeah.
His numbers may be bogus, but he's an expert and he's got a certified valuation kind of a deal. And this is the kicker. The IRS believes him.
Yeah, that's true. All you have is to have a reasonable basis. You have to be kind of smart enough to figure out what's happened in the past and what the court has said in the past.
And I'm not diminishing.
And apply it to your condition.
I am not diminishing this news.
Oh, yeah.
Certified valuation.
Yeah, it,
whatever.
A lot of people rely on it.
It is necessary. It's very important in, you mentioned it, divorces, deaths, sales, all sorts of stuff. Because you can cheat the government by saying, I'm going to sell this business to somebody for $5 million, but it's only worth $3 million. Okay?
Yep.
And exchange debt for it. It's off the books. There's all sorts of conniving things that the IRS looks for.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
They pay attention.
And the Germans, I must say this, I lived down in Florida, and they would do that all the time to pay off their debts between themselves.
Really?
Yeah, they would carry them for $1 value, and then they would transfer the ownership and say, I owed a guy $800,000. I give him my house. I sell it to him. Yeah. And we're even. Now he's got a house there, and then he swaps that for the next guy.
Right.
I'm serious.
The barter system. Yeah. You still got to pay tax on barter, right, Ben?
Not when you're in Germany.
But yeah, we talked about that a few weeks ago. All right, well, we probably ought to take a break here. We'll get some questions when we come back.
Please, let's do that.
Now, you're listening to Money Talks. Don't touch that dial.
All material presented is compiled from sources believed to be reliable and current, but accuracy cannot be guaranteed. The contents are intended for general information purposes only. Information provided should not be the sole basis in making any decisions and is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified professional, such as a tax consultant, insurance advisor, or attorney. Although this material is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with respect to the subject matter, it may not apply in all situations. This is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell any financial instruments. It is not our intention to state, indicate, or imply in any manner that current or past results are indicative of future profitability or expectations. Portfolio holdings discussed are subject to change. There is no guarantee that in the future these securities will be held in Hensler accounts. As with all investments, there are associated inherent risks. Please obtain and review all financial material carefully before investing. Hensler is not licensed to offer or sell insurance products. This overview is not to be construed as an offer to purchase any insurance products.